Good evening. This is Catherine Austin Fitz on July 28th, 2016. I'm speaking to you from Zurich, Switzerland. I've had an amazing, highly productive trip here in Europe over the last 2 weeks. I'll talk more about it in Money and Markets next week. I'm flying back to the States tomorrow. Tonight, we're talking about the theme of the second quarter wrap-up, productivity, prosperity, and the Popsicle Index. Tonight's discussion is an overview of the key issues. We'll publish the written text after I return to the States. I assure you, this is a very important topic, and you're going to be hearing about it on the Solari Report for a long time to come. You're going to be reading about it in the press for a long time to come. This is a major topic. Let's start with some definitions. Productivity is a measure of the efficiency of production. Labor productivity typically refers to the value of output for an hour of time input, so the idea being we can create more widgets with less hours of our time, and the more widgets we can produce, in theory, the more prosperous some or all of us are going to be. Prosperity is the state of flourishing or thriving. Prosperity often encompasses wealth, but also includes other factors, which can be independent of wealth, such as happiness and health. And one of the issues, of course, that we're going to talk about tonight is productivity leading to general prosperity or simply prosperity for the few? The Popsicle Index is a quality of life indicator that I developed when I worked in Washington. It's the percent of people in a community who believe a child can leave their home, go to the nearest place to buy a popsicle or a snack, and come home alone safely. Specifically designed to be about safety and to be subjective, your Popsicle Index is whatever you feel it is. Bankers cannot fund academics to prove your number is wrong or to otherwise rig the numbers. And that was exceptionally important to me because too much of the quality of life statistics are very much influenced by the people who fund them. So why do I want to discuss productivity, prosperity, and the Popsicle Index? First of all, there is significant and growing concern in the establishment about productivity and productivity growth. And the public discussion can be confusing and misleading. I thought it would be helpful to discuss this issue as it's coming up now and why it's important. I don't want to admit to you how many hours I've spent researching and stewing over this topic, because you have to look at the entire global economy and political system at a very high level to see the issues and contradictions involved. And I must say, I find the lies on this topic particularly frustrating and infuriating, and it's always important to me to give you a coherent presentation without losing my temper, which is very hard to do. As background on productivity, I wanted to quote from the McKinsey Global Institute study, Global Growth, Can Productivity Save the Day in an Aging World? You can find a link to this 2015 study, which is a very good overview of the establishment point of view related to the general economy. Again, the link is in the subscriber links in your commentary. McKinsey reviews a G20. It's basically G20 minus the EU plus Nigeria, which is essentially 80% of global GDP. So that's the 19 countries of the G20 minus EU, and then adding Nigeria. Between 1964 and 2014, they describe employment growth as growing at 1.7%, fueled by the growth in the numbers of workers and productivity growth. You basically saw the labor force globally double. And what they say is employment growth is set to drop by 0.3% a year. And they expect employment to peak within 50 years. And that means if employment growth is not going to, or if employment's not going to grow, you need global productivity to grow, not only at the rate that it's been doing over the last 50 years, but to make up the difference in the changing demographics and the shrinking in the labor force. They say to compensate for slowing employment, productivity will need to be 80% faster instead of 1.8%, 3.3% a year, which is a phenomenal kick up in productivity. They look at five sector case studies: agriculture, food processing, automotive, retail, and healthcare. and basically come back believing it's impossible. I'm sorry, believing it's possible, really by adopting best practices on a much broader basis, and from innovations they describe as pushing the frontier. Some of the key things they think contribute to this could be boost labor force participation of women and young people. We've talked a lot on the Solera report about the efforts to promote women, and if you look at both productivity globally, that's a very big reason. And then if you look at the GNP globally of women, if we combine it with the G7, you basically get a way of checkmating China and the growth and influence of Asia. So that's one of the reasons why I think this effort by the Americans to play the quote unquote women's card and throughout the G7 is very much related to this. So one is boost labor force participation of women and young people. The others that McKinsey names are increase cross-border flows, invest in physical and digital infrastructure, foster research and development demand and investment, remove barriers to competition in the service sector, craft the regulatory environment. I think what they mean by that is stop the regulatory environment from destroying the economy, and then improve education. I would say it differently, lower the price of education, improve access. What they describe is the global economy has expanded sixfold in the last 50 years as a result of the growth in the world population per capita income. They say the global population more than doubled, with average per capita income almost tripling to 13,000 as of 2012. They do not, they stipulate that McKinsey does not see growth as an end in itself, but as a critical enabler for meeting a much broader set of desirable goals, including economic opportunity, meeting pension fund obligations, and managing public debt. Now, we'll get to those when we talk about the financial coup d'etat, because I'm a little concerned about the belief that you need significant growth to fund past obligations. You do when there's been a financial coup d'etat. They refer to productivity growth. They said U.S. and Western Europe grew at about 1.5 to 1.9% productivity growth between 64 and 2014. South Korea and Japan, 4.6 and 2.8% respectively, much stronger. Although developing countries' variance in productivity has been much wider, China's productivity grew at an annual rate of 5.7% between 64 and 2004. Absolutely phenomenal. In contrast, Mexico and Saudi Arabia clocked less than 1% annual productivity growth. So the absolute gap between productivity in emerging and developing economies is not narrowed. You'll hear again and again people saying that the convergence is an Asian phenomena, not an emerging market phenomena. And if you could change that, it would be a big make a big difference, because productivity in the developed economies today remains about five times more than in the emerging markets. One of the things they point out is the real demographic tailwind. Germany, Italy, Japan, and Russia anticipate labor pools could shrink by one-third by 2064. India's labor pool could expand by 54% over the next 50 years, while China could shrink by one-fifth. China has a real aging population. It's not just the G7. Anyway, so they describe the demographic tailwind and the differences that it could make. So let me just read one of their conclusions. The demographic tailwind that powered the world economy over the past 50 years is declining in most countries and even becoming a demographic headwind against growth. Declining fertility and aging populations are eroding growth in the labor force across the globe. Peak employment is now in prospect for many countries over the next half century, and the shifting age structure has far-reaching economic and social consequences. As populations age, this increased dependency ratios and reduces savings. Only a substantial increase in productivity growth is capable of fully counteracting waning demographic tailwinds. Okay, so those are some comments from the McKinsey Productivity Study. I would encourage you to take a look at that study and some of the other links we put up, because it gives you a good sense of some of the global statistics on this issue. Now I want to talk about why I find the discussion around productivity to be very confusing or contradictory. And I think it's important for you to understand this as we see the debate unfold, as we're going to see it in a variety of global campaigns, as well as government policies that have tremendous impact on the budgets, both in the G7 and globally. Number one, the governance system that we're operating on under in planet Earth operates in secret and has been centralizing control. Now, why do I mention that? Market systems are generally supportive of increasing productivity, but markets require transparency and general trust in the laws and systems. When you start rigging markets and rigging financial systems, and you start using really excessive amounts of organized crime and financial fraud to centralize control, all of that is antithetical to market economics. And you add on to that secrecy that breeds privilege, and that is also antithetical to market economies, terrible for productivity. In short, the establishment is increasingly managing double binds, because you have a desire to generate increased returns to a centralized system, to do it in secret, at the same time that you want to increase general productivity. Those are contradictory, and it's a frustration in the system, which is getting more and more painful. Next, there's a difference between increasing productivity in the military-industrial complex or the corporate infrastructure and increasing general productivity in the wider economy. And we've seen more and more sort of a win-lose relationship between sort of the machinery and general productivity. Increasingly, these are not aligned. If you look at the chart I put up with a commentary between 1948 and 2011, in the United States, productivity growth grew by 254%. Hourly compensation only grew by 113%. And if you look at the chart from 1973 on, compensation was basically flatlined, which meant all of the growth went to the machinery. Essentially, none of the growth went to labor. Yes, you saw a productivity of corporate machinery. You saw a decrease of productivity in the general population. That process made it easier to cream off increases in productivity to the centralized system. But again, it wasn't good for the general population. I think the general population knows that, and in fact is increasingly making choices that choose their own well-being over contributing to productivity growth. And it's one of the reasons you're seeing a stall. Productivity growth, again, as McKinsey described, averaged 1.8% over the last 50 years. However, that is really a focus on income and what's happening in the income part of the financial statement. That growth was bought at great expense to the balance sheet. Both tracked and untracked. Let me explain what I mean by that. We experienced an explosion in government debt, which financed a lot of what was going on that contributed to productivity growth. We experienced a debasement of the environment. We experienced a debasement of community and civic institutions in many countries. We experienced a debasement of human and intellectual capital, certainly in the United States and other countries. If you look at all of those dynamics on the balance sheet, what you're seeing is, yeah, the income statement looks great. If you look at the cost of the balance sheet of some of that productivity growth, it's not so wonderful. I would submit we've had an enormous liquidation of the balance sheet, which has occurred to juice up the growth. And one of the things that's happening now is that you're seeing a general exhaustion as we now try and carry the debt. It's important to note at this point that we see tremendous expenditure going on of things which destroy general productivity. So $1 trillion a year for military, even more for covert operations and false flags, enormous amounts of money building up a surveillance and police state, all of this designed to support the centralized control and maintain the centralized control in the face of the sort of exhausting of the balance sheet. But the reality is that's an enormous amount of money spent to control the general population as opposed to help the general population be more productive. Now, part of the challenge in all of this is that an enormous amount of money has been disappearing. We've talked a lot about it on the Solari report. Where are the dividends going? They're certainly not being reinvested necessarily in a closed system. So whether we've been putting money in the underground infrastructure, we did a great Solari report with Richard Dolan on underground bases, on the secret space program, you've had access to all of our discussions, Richard Dolan, Joseph Farrell, and I at the Secret Space Program 2014-2015 conference. Have we capitalized a breakaway civilization? We've had those discussions with Richard and Joseph as well. Are we funding secret weaponry? Are we paying an off-planet dividend, as described in that in the movie Jupiter Ascending? Whatever's happening, you're seeing the general economy being harvested financially. And that drain combined with the debt load environmental damage is part of what's stalling the overall economy. Certainly as digital systems speed up, it gets harder and harder to deny that money is not disappearing. It clearly is. Which brings us to our next point, which is the way we've harvested the general economy and sort of kept the game going is by having an inflationary model. You central banks continue to inflate the money supply, and that helps us manage and take care of the debt and sort of offset some of the debasement. If you look at the current tools available to create productivity with, if you look at what is going to make corporations more productive, you're talking about artificial intelligence, robotics, and lots of forms of automation that are highly deflationary. And that creates a real challenge. If the things that the government can do to create productivity growth are deflationary, then how are we going to fund the government debt and pension systems? Deflation means less income to the general population, which means less need for corporations, less taxes for government, less need for big governmental institutions, less ability to generate secret dividends. So there's a tremendous conflict between the obvious steps to increase machinery productivity with what will keep the inflationary model going. And it's one of the reasons you're seeing labor deflation and deflation from automation and digital systems being offset with, you know, tremendous QE from central banks trying to keep the inflation model going. I'm not sure they can. One of the ways, you know, the whole point of a corporation is to make stuff for people. If people don't need the stuff of corporations, if they have no income, then the corporations need to go away. Now, we've kept a lot of corporations going with government purchases and government mandates. We've seen government credit support the banks. Two examples of hideous government mandates have been the healthcare mandate on healthcare insurance for Obamacare, and you know, clearly coming with corporations getting into the education business is a continued mandate to pay the property taxes for education, private education, corporations that we don't really want. Anyway, so one of the things that's going to happen as this productivity issue continues is we're going to see downsizing of corporations. We're certainly seeing it in the retail area, but it's going to continue because the corporate capacity, if we're going to shrink the income, we're going to have to shrink the corporations. Interestingly enough, it's going to be many corporations who have a vested interest in having the general population maintain their income. Okay, next point. Centralization has cut off significant sources of productivity and prosperity. And this comes up a lot when you look at making local economies healthy. There's tremendous economic loss happening, and you see it all over Europe, you see it all over the United States, because we're not free to have local currency and local equity vehicles. If you could have liquid local equity vehicles, imagine mutual funds or venture funds for your neighborhood or REITs for your neighborhood, where we could invest our IRA and 401k in liquid vehicles for our neighborhood. If we could have local currencies, you see so many places across the United States or across Europe where you have lots of people unemployed and lots of work that needs done. But when you have a big centralized currency, you don't have the currency float you need to really get those local economies going. And we really see that centralized capital control having a tremendous impact in lowering the productivity and prosperity of the local economy and really shrinking investment that should be happening and that's economic. Added to that, tremendous centralized regulation both throughout the G7 countries, both North America and in Europe. That regulation really cutting off and shutting down a lot of small business and making life difficult for the big companies as well. And the result of that is you're not only cutting off something that creates a lot of employment for the population, but that generates a lot of innovation. And add to that the fact that we've had tremendous suppression of technologies that reduce personal expenses, from energy and related transportation technologies to all sorts of natural health care. Just look at the latest documentary on the truth about cancer and compare some of the natural health remedies for cancer with what the sort of medical institutions recommend and support. Anyway, so centralization is really cut off and suppress significant sources of productivity and prosperity. And the question is, why, if we want the general population to have income and to be prosperous, why are we doing this? And the reality is a lot of that destruction has been financed by government debt. So, you know, you come into neighborhoods in the American heartland where many, many people have been put out of work and have lost their income and are now on Social Security disability or food stamps or welfare. And that is part of what is running up the public debt. So not only are we destroying the economy, but we're contributing to the explosion of debt. So the question is, if we want productivity and prosperity, why are we doing that? Now, I wanted to mention there are numerous areas, and McKinsey mentioned some of them, where there's tremendous, I would say, widespread support, both political and economic, to increase productivity. One, as I said, is increasing women's participation in education in the labor force globally. And it's one of the reasons why I think the Clinton nomination has such establishment support. They want a woman, any woman will do. so they see the president, a female president, as basically a marketing brand, not necessarily the person who runs anything, but essential to this push to get women participating and get women to supporting a G7 dominant world as opposed to an Asian dominant world. Increase in infrastructure, very important. We had a great Solari report last year on infrastructure. And I think one of the things you're going to see after the election in America is a renewed push to try and increase investment in infrastructure. Increase investment in R&D is another one McKinsey mentioned, clearly another way, and I think widespread support for that. Lower the cost and improve access to education. Unfortunately, that's not the way that the reengineering of education is going, certainly in this country, but there's an explosion in the internet of making much more knowledge accessible, and I think that can make a difference. And finally, close the gap between developed and emerging markets, not just in Asia, but globally. One of the things you hear when people talk about productivity is that there are three areas of very weak productivity growth. And these are the areas they say need to be addressed if you want to really kickstart productivity growth globally. One is government, one is healthcare, one is education. Now, what you've seen, certainly in the G7 countries, as digital technology has become available, you've seen corporations apply it very aggressively to re-engineer and produce enormous labor productivity. It hasn't happened in government. If anything, Government has become more paperful and more bureaucratic than ever. I know when I went to run the FHA in 1989, we had 7,000 people. I figured I could re-engineer the programs and do it with 250 people, and computerize systems. Now, we cut some. We never cut anywhere near that much. Politically, it wasn't feasible. And if anything, you've seen government employment generally go up in this country. So if you re-engineer government in the way you can, you're talking about massive downsizing in the number of employed people by government, particularly certainly in Europe and certainly in North America. Healthcare is a very complex issue. What we're watching in the United States is the use of digital technology to try and make all processes explicit so that you can basically move them into online systems and corporatize them. If you look at what's happening in healthcare in this country, I think, or in the United States, I think it's absolutely insane. Within it, there are a lot of good things happening. But again, you're talking about ultimately massive layoffs and a system very much run around the pharmaceutical model of how healthcare should work. And I think it's going to push tremendous people out of the system and be phenomenally expensive. So if you look at the approach that they're using, we're headed for something that's going to massively reduce productivity in the general population. And how that's going to produce increased productivity is remains to be seen. It's certainly a topic that we could spend several Solari reports on. And then education, same problem. They're looking to digitize everything, put everything online, cut out all the teachers, just like you cut the doctors and nurses out of healthcare, on the theory that sort of a corporate, high testing, highly controlled, highly centralized model will somehow be more productive. It will certainly be more productive for Microsoft. Whether it's more productive for anybody else, I would say is highly unlikely. So these areas are areas where the establishment is going aggressively to re-engineer in a way that, from my point of view, is going to be highly destructive to the productivity of the general population, and we're headed into a real political tsunami over that. And it's part of what's creating the frustration you see in the American campaign and a lot of the support, or some of the support you see for a candidate like Trump. The fury of being mandated to pay for healthcare insurance that basically is not producing an efficient or useful product, and certainly not getting you anywhere near to better healthcare. Anyway, so this area of government healthcare and education is important. It is an area of weak productivity. There's a huge amount that can be done. The way they're going about it, I think, is going to be so detrimental to the general population's productivity that there's going to be some pretty some pretty major political brouhahas over this. Okay, in the commentary, next point, in the commentary on productivity, prosperity, and the Popsicle Index, I quoted a report from Fox News. Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, said the global economy's inability to produce goods and services efficiently is going to cripple the ability to pay for pensions and healthcare programs for the elderly. Quote, "We have a global problem of a shortage in productivity growth, and it is not only the United States, but it's pretty much around the world." So I describe that on the commentary as Alan Greenspan's latest round of lies. Now, let me explain what the problem we have is in terms of being crippled to pay for pensions and healthcare programs for the elderly. The number one cause of that is that we've had a financial coup d'etat. So I've described extensively why I believe $40 trillion plus was stolen between money missing from the federal government, the pump and dump of the stock market in the internet bubble, the bailouts, $27 trillion in the bailouts. We've seen more money missing going out through the war in the Middle East, not to mention what's happened with things, various financial frauds like LIBOR and Madoff and continued mortgage shenanigans, particularly in the servicing area and the foreclosure area. I could go on and on and on. And let's not even talk about what zero interest rates have done to pension fund returns. So basically, we've had a financial coup d'etat. We've had trillions of dollars stolen. Blaming productivity for not being able to cope with this is really blaming the victim. So it's called projective identification. We talked about it with Helen Schaepman in terms of what they're doing to try and blame the victims in the Madoff fraud. And you want to attack the victims before they attack you. I mean, what happens if all the people who are beneficiaries of pension funds get together and say, well, wait a minute, where is the money? Where's all the money we lost on the pump and dump of the stock market? Where's all the money that went out the back door as a result of the pump and dump of the housing market? Where's all the money that went out the back door on the pump and dump of the internet stocks? Where's all the money that went out the back door on all these different various frauds? Where's the money that went out of the U.S. government on the missing money, the $4 trillion missing from the government agencies? Where's the money and where are the assets? Look at all the technology we've transferred out of the black budget over to Silicon Valley. You know, where's the money and assets and how do we get them back? Because we have a legal right to them. It's better to constantly blame productivity. You're basically saying people aren't productive. And because people aren't productive, we're not generating enough to, you know, to keep the system going. Anyway, I think let's not fall into that trap. Let's not get deterred. If there's a problem with the pension funds, if there's a problem with the retirement systems, if there's a problem with government not having enough money to pay for healthcare, let's really look at the real problem, which is where'd the $40 trillion go and why are we running those systems to be far more expensive than they need to be, including pumping up corporate stocks in a way that is not producing general productivity for the general system. Okay, next point. You need to take responsibility to invest and manage in your productivity. Right now, we're going through an enormous gapping of the economy. And I've talked a lot on the Solari Report about the switch from an industrial economy, a 2.0 economy, to a networked economy 3.0. And what you're seeing is a dramatic shift in skills and abilities that are economically relevant. You're also seeing a tremendous opportunity for individuals to disintermediate their income statement and balance sheet. That means do a lot more for themselves. There's a lot of entrepreneurial opportunities, but they're much more global. So if you look at the education and skills we needed 20 years ago versus what we need now, things are changing. And it's exceptionally important that you and I make sure that we are thinking very creatively and intelligently about our personal productivity, how to invest in it, how to manage it, how to improve it. Because this is a time when falling behind can be very painful, but jumping the curve ahead can be enormously profitable. One of the most important things, in addition to building your education skills and your learning speed, is risk management. And it's something I talk a lot about on the Solari Report. You're going to keep hearing it from me again and again. We need to individually avoid the debasement of the general systems. When we talked about infrastructure in last year's second quarter wrap-up, I talked about the importance. If the infrastructure is deteriorating where you are, you need to think about that and whether it's time to move or not or how you deal with it. I keep bringing up the fact that if your child becomes severely autistic as a result of a heavy schedule of vaccines, as one mother in Vax pointed out, it could cost you 5 million present value to basically take care of a severely autistic child throughout their life and provide for their, for their care after you're gone. That's a major risk. Do you have any idea how much money you have to make on your investment portfolio to generate $5 million to pay for that? So avoiding the debasement, avoiding the big hits is going to be unbelievably important. And you can't just assume that you can trust the system to watch out for your general productivity. What we're seeing, particularly in the United States, is more and more debasement of general productivity to protect the machinery and to protect the ability of the centralized system to garner off more in secret. And so you need to pay more attention to risk management if you're going to stay productive and protect your productivity. One thing I'm going to keep on harping, and I've harped on it, and I'm going to keep on harping, to stay productive, we need to build our immunity to mind control technology. I keep asking the question, why is the American leadership, where is their hubris coming from? Why are they so arrogant? And clearly, it's really helped me to be out of the United States for 2 weeks and then occasionally pop back in and take a look at what's going on. I think one of our greatest challenges for the Solari Report subscribers is how to deal with mind control technology. And I think the mind control technology is working so well that it's really, if anything, it's making the leadership stupid as well. And I think it's very important to the leadership's plans on how they intend to manage the divergence between machinery productivity while suppressing general productivity, and how they plan on managing continued sort of generation of resources to the centralized system. So let me use an example. I was watching both of the conventions, and it was phenomenal to me to watch the general delegates and attendees at the convention supporting people and things that are completely contradictory to what they say their values. So this week is the Democratic convention, and since I know more about the Clintons than I do yet on the Trumps, I'll use that. So let's look. We have an enormous number of progressives who voted for Bernie Sanders, who proceeded this week to produce enormous cheering when Hillary Clinton became the nominee. So let's take a look at who the Clintons are. The Clintons engineered the housing bubble. So, all those foreclosures that have been happening, the drop in the housing ownership rate. It was the Clintons who engineered the initial housing bubble. It would never have happened without them doing a lot of what they had to do. And I'm telling you, it took a lot of work. I saw a lot of it happen. And it took really targeting and destroying Hamilton Securities to make that happen. So, I was there. It was intimate. The Clintons engineered GATT and NAFTA. They built a slave labor camp industry in the United States and filled it with innocent children. I've written a book about it. It's all there. It's all documented. They engineered the destruction of Haiti, of Libya, of Kosovo, and a few other disaster capitalism situations. We had a great Solari report with Dr. Daddy Cherry on Haiti, and I encourage you to listen to it. The Clintons have experienced numerous sex scandals, including Bill ditching his Secret Service detail so he could spend time in the Caribbean with, at the palatial estate of a prosecuted pedophile. The Clintons helped engineer years of narcotics trafficking in MENA, Arkansas, and I would point out in and around that there were unbelievable number of related assassinations. They engineered trains missing from U.S. government agencies while they were last in the White House. They've engaged in hundreds of millions of dollars of charitable racketeering around the world, engineering a global pay-to-play between the Clinton Foundation and Bill Clinton's speaking fees and the Office of the Secretary of State. They've openly passed on, classified information and trafficked in it for personal benefit. They've supported the 9/11 cover-up, the war in Iraq, the creation of a surveillance police state. I could go on and on and on. So we have a world of progressives cheering the nomination, including enormous numbers of African Americans cheering the people who basically targeted Blacks to move them out of neighborhoods, fill up the prisons while they moved in Hispanics. I've documented all of that. Or who genocided God knows how many people in Haiti and took an island that was economically self-sufficient and food self-sufficient and basically wiped out their food, their local food supply. So they had to import Arkansas rice, all documented. So how in the world can a group of progressives cheer the nomination of such people? And you look at it once you get perspective on it, and I was realizing the extent to which the mind control technology is working. Now, as I said, you know, the same thing happened on the other side of the aisle. I won't go through the Republican side tonight, but what we need to understand is that the mind control technology is quite astonishing. I'm going to be talking with John Rappaport in our next discussion in August about how we navigate a world where, you know, people that we, our friends, family, and other people are very much a captive by it. But I think there's no doubt that the leadership intends to use the surveillance capitalism network, whether it's smartphones, the internet, TV, smart meters, but very invasive technology. And if you think it's bad now, wait till you see what's coming with 5G. But they plan to use very significant mind control technology. And back to the question of productivity, if you're going to stay productive, then you need your time and investment to go to doing those things that are going to increase your productivity, your prosperity, as opposed to use your time and energy to basically produce a secret dividend for the system. And that is at the heart of all of our conundrums of how we navigate the system. So in closing, let me just make one last point, and that's on the Popsicle Index. When I first developed the Popsicle Index in Washington, I was struck by the extraordinary tension between doing what was in the interest of living, what I would call living equity, people, animals, the environment, living things, versus financial capital in the form of the S&P index or the Dow index. And the way I described it, and you can see this on the little flash we put up on the Dylan Reed book, basically the Popsicle Index in America has been going down and the S&P index has been going up. And what we've seen is a win-lose relationship between the two, a win-lose relationship between humanity and the financial system. And I've always believed that the way we get to an explosion of both productivity and prosperity is to re-engineer those to a win-win basis. In other words, let's get the Popsicle Index and the S&P going up together. Certainly, there are a tremendous number of great corporations and great companies that do make the Popsicle Index go up and that are very Popsicle Index friendly. So the corporate model and the Popsicle Index can absolutely be friends. And believe it or not, my estimate is that the wealth explosion that could occur if you could make them friends is enormous. Big change, big adjustment. But you make those two, you create a win-win relationship and alignment between the Popsicle Index and human capital and the S&P index and financial capital, and you're going to have explosive wealth. That's part of moving away from a debt model and into an equity model. The sticking point is the need for centralization, for centralized control, the need for secrecy. And so we've got the planet running on a central banking warfare model and producing some huge cash flow that's going someplace in secret, and we don't know why. And that's why I keep coming back to the governance system and the importance of transparency, because the cost of the centralization, the cost of the secrecy, the cost of the privilege that comes from that secrecy is very destructive to wealth. I once said that our current wealth on planet Earth was 1% of what it could be if you could build, if you were free to have transparency, to build markets and to allow markets to work and to allow the Popsicle Index and the S&P to get into alignment. The question in my mind that I keep grappling with is, how do we find a way to realign? My goal is to make sure your Popsicle Index is rising no matter what the leadership is doing. So even if it's a centralized model, I want to see your Popsicle Index going up. It's just a very different world where we have to conspire to do that if the centralized model is going to prevail, because then we're in a win-lose relationship. And so long as there's a win-lose relationship, it's in our interest to stay focused on our own productivity and to make sure that we're not the lose in the win-lose relationship. So as I said, if you get some time, check out the links in the subscriber area. Keep an eye on this discussion of productivity and prosperity in the global campaigns and in the negotiations on the government budgets. It's a discussion that's just begun in the mainstream media, and it's a discussion that's just begun on the Solari report. It's a very important discussion because, as I said, there's been a financial coup d'etat, and if anything, although I never like to call myself a victim, we're the victims. And if anything, we need to say, where's our money? We need to get our money back, as opposed to take the fall for, oh, we're not productive. So as I said, this is a discussion that's just begun. Next step for me is we'll publish the write-up with as part of the full wrap-up treatment that you'll have in mid-August. So productivity, prosperity, and the Popsicle Index. Ladies and gentlemen, may your Popsicle Index be rising. Good night and good luck.